Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it mean to be a nerd in America? While we adults may take a certain amount of pride in our nerdiness and find it presents few impediments to a satisfying social life, the stigma is much greater for those enduring middle and high school. In those settings, nerds are viewed as brainy, unpopular, unfashionable kids who are loved by teachers but shunned by the in crowd. My guest today has treated those seen by their peers as nerds in a clinical setting, and he has seen just how damaging the label can be, to the extent that some teens choose classes and hobbies based on what is cool rather than what they might be really good at. David Anderegg is professor of psychology at Bennington College in Vermont and also treats patients in a private psychotherapy practice. His book, which has just been updated and re-released in trade paperback, is called Nerds: How Dorks, Dweebs, Techies, and Trekkies Can Save America and Why They Might Be Our Last Hope. David, welcome to Think.
Thank you very much for having me.
Can you start by talking about what the nerd stereotype means?
It's a complex stereotype. It takes a long time to learn, but basically what it means to kids is that there are people who are adept at science and technology but are romantically hopeless. They are unfashionable. They are unlikable. They are pleasing to adults, but they are totally uncool, and they're likely to be picked on and likely to be in some oppositional relationship to those kids we call, quote, jocks, unquote. But that's what it means to kids.
And this dawning awareness of who's a nerd and who's not starts really young.
It starts very young. As I talk about in the book, it's a complex stereotype, and kids learn it in pieces. The first thing that young kids learn about nerds is that it's a bad thing to be. Mm-hmm. And so they don't even know what it is yet, but they want to make sure that they aren't one, because they've heard about this mysterious thing. And mostly they learn about it from the intonation. You know, they hear older kids and they hear grown-ups saying the word, but they don't just say the word. They say it in a very derogatory intonation. They say, nerds, or something like that. And so young kids are trying to figure out, uh-oh, what is that, and how can I make sure I don't end up like that?
So right about the time they stop viewing baby as the worst insult you could possibly lob at another human being, the nerd comes along.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Just about that time.
Where did the word come from, by the way?
Nobody really knows. The etymology of the word is argued about. There are some people who believe it came from an acronym from Canada that stands for Northeast Research and Development, some company that had that acronym on their uniforms. Everybody up at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York, which is not too far from me, they all believe that they invented the term, and they believe that it was talked about in the 1950s as a way of spelling the word drunk backwards. So it should be K-N-U-R-D, mm-hmm. And so N-E-R-D is a misspelling. But I think I don't think that's right.
And most of us, you know, for those of us adults who are fine with, you know, calling ourselves nerds in a sort of affectionate way, it's important to remember that it was not easy to do that when we were 12.
No, that's one of the very difficult things about this, is that a lot of grown-ups, you know, young adults, get to be about 21 or 22, and they look back on their middle school years, and they think about how silly that was, and they think, oh, you know, there's nothing wrong with nerds. Nerds are cool. And then they can't understand, many of them, in talking to me, they can't understand why I make such a big fuss out of it. But it's a big deal for 12-year-olds, because 12-year-olds are not yet ironic and hip enough to embrace an ironic embrace a negative stereotype ironically. You know, that's way beyond most 12-year-olds. And so to them, it's really a bad thing.
And you call the time of deepest nerd anxiety, that age at which kids are pretty much universally at the height of their awkwardness, between 11 and 14.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all middle school kids are terribly awkward, and they're very, very concerned about fitting in. Research studies have shown that in America, at least, it's kind of the absolute peak of conformity behavior is seventh grade, mm-hmm. that everybody is terribly anxious about doing the right thing, wearing the right clothes, etc. So there are all sorts of conditions that, if they set you apart, they're not a good thing. But this is a big one.
So what do kids feel like when they come to you and say, my biggest problem is that I'm a nerd? What are they experiencing?
Well, the ones who are nerd labeled, and I make a big distinction between the nerd labeled and the nerd labeling kids.
Mm-hmm.
But nerd labeled kids are kids who are, they're suffering from an imposition of a picture that comes from our culture, a stereotype that comes from our culture, that really has very, very little to do with them. I'm thinking about a young man who I saw not too long ago who is one of the best math students that has been seen in his school. He's also a very good athlete. He's very handsome and likable. And yet everybody imposes this stereotype on him, which really doesn't have a whole lot to do with who he is, that he's unattractive, that he's creepy, that he's disgusting because he happens to be an excellent math student and all the teachers love him for that. And so it's very distressing to have something imposed on you that doesn't really have a whole lot to do with who you feel that you really are.
I don't know the child, obviously, but I'm guessing his parents have tried telling him, well, they're just jealous of you. Is that true at all?
I do think that sometimes kids are jealous of nerdy kids, but not for the reason that you might think.
Mm-hmm.
I think kids are sometimes jealous of nerd-labeled kids because those kids are usually closer to adults, and they're not so self-conscious about their appearance, and they're not so self-conscious about having to separate from adults. And they're usually kids who, you know, they like doing things that adults like them to do. They do well in school. Sometimes their kids were in Boy Scouts, which I find terrible, but it's certainly true around here that Boy Scouts is something which has been abandoned by hip kids because it's far too nerdy.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are kids who are sort of comfortable being liked by adults. And I think kids who are really struggling with separation from the adult world, I think they get kind of mad about, like, why should you be so comfortable and why should you be so unself-conscious when I feel so terribly self-conscious all the time? Why should you get away with being so comfortable with yourself? I think that's the source of the envy, but
yeah.
It's pretty complicated.
Well, you know, I have children in this age group, and it strikes me often that there's so much media created specifically for this age group that we've almost told kids it's never okay to like what adults like because there are movies just for you, there are TV shows just for you, there are books there. You know, so there's almost a forced break from parents even beyond what adolescence requires.
Yes, absolutely. That there's, you know, when was it? 10, 15 years ago, maybe more now, the enormous discovery of the tween market.
Yeah.
And all the books and movies and television channels and everything that are directed at, well, not even 11 to 14s, but 8 to 12s, really. And it is a specific culture, and it's a specific life which is kind of divorced from adult influence. And if you watch movies or TV shows aimed at that demographic, there's a huge emphasis on being separate and being cool and being uninfluenced by adults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but when I was 8, nobody, including the kids who would end up being really cool, cared about what anybody else wore.
No, absolutely not. It was not, fashion was not really important when we were 8. I don't know how old you're younger than I am, but it certainly wasn't when I was 8.
Yeah, if your tough skin's ripped, you were in trouble, but that was pretty much the extent of it at that age. So, you know, parents obviously suffer when their kids are labeled this way. What about the kids who are doing the labeling? What do we know about them?
Well, I think those kids are, in the long run, are going to be in more trouble. And simply because I think, we have very tough times in terms of employment in this country. And what we know about the jobs that are available are jobs in technical pursuits, which require science and math or engineering education. And kids who label others as nerds and who are anxious about that tend to not identify themselves as a math person. I'm not a math person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a science person because it's uncool. And then, you know, years down the road, it's very hard to go back and take all those fundamental science and math courses that you missed. And years down the road, you need those science and math courses. In my book, I talked about a study that was done in Michigan about asking people what they regret most about high school. And there was a very sizable proportion of people who what they regretted about high school was not taking enough science and math courses. Hmm. And, of course, my question is, well, why didn't you?
Yeah.
And I think one of the answers, maybe not the only answer, but certainly one of the answers, is the enormous power of cultural stereotypes that tell kids that it's uncool to do so.
Yeah, so the ones that you're most worried about at this point are the borderline kids who could sort of go either way and do whatever they can to preserve whatever sense they have that they're cool.
Yeah, because in the long run, nerd-labeled kids like the kid I was just talking about who's one of the most talented math students to come along in his junior high school, he'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If he survives, which he probably will because he has a very strong, supportive family, he'll get to college and he will succeed and he will find a niche and he'll be happy. But it's those kids in the middle who could go into science and technical careers. They don't have to be PhDs, but could get technical training in high school or a two-year college degree, and they choose not to do that. Those are the kids who, you know, I don't know what they're going to do with their lives, but it's going to be kind of hard to get a job.
Why is it cool, David, to be obsessed with soccer but not with Scrabble?
Well, this is a long, complicated story, and I do think some of it goes way back to the beginning of our history as a republic. When we started out, American intellectual culture was trying desperately to establish itself as separate from the intellectual culture of Europe. And so we devised an ideal of an American scholar, right? And there's the essay by Ralph Waldo Emerson called The American Scholar. And it's all about we learn from nature, we're practical, we don't learn from books, we don't go and hang around in musty old universities like all those Europeans. And it was a sort of an American ideal about how Americans learn, which is very robust and outdoorsy and natural, and it's very appealing. But I think there's an anti-book learning strain mm-hmm. that goes way, way back in American culture. And I do think that's, you know, I think we're still suffering from it.
Well, it's ironic that this comes from Emerson, but essentially he describes the scholars as pitiful. You know, they're just shut up all day and away from the real world.
Oh, Emerson, you know, I love Emerson, or I did until I started looking into this. I'm not a big Emerson fan so much anymore because the essay, The American Scholar, makes, you know, book learning sound like a disease, and academics are sort of equated with priests and of questionable sexuality, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's really kind of scurrilous if you read it now, I think.
And then there's, of course, the famous tale of Ichabod Crane.
Yes, I'm famous for suggesting that we do not teach the legend of Sleepy Hollow to anybody under the age of 18. I think the Legend of Sleepy Hollow was a satire, mm-hmm. right? It was a satire on this idea, and it's very funny, and it's very clever. But in it, there is the, you know, the book, the teacher, who is gawky and awkward and sexually unappealing and confident of his knowledge, but unaware of how unappealing he is. And then there's Brom Bones, you know, Brom Bones who's like adventurous and swashbuckling, and you know, in the end of the story, Brom Bones gets the girl, and Ichabod Crane gets scared out of town, and afterwards, all the Dutch burghers in town burn books because they don't want their children to be contaminated by book learning.
Let me have you stop there. We're going to take a quick break. David Anderegg is my guest. His new book is called Nerds. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education, offering an information session March 15th for its CFP certificate program in Dallas, starting in April. You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is professor of psychology at Bennington College, David Anderegg. He also serves patients in a private psychotherapy practice, and he's the author of the recently re-released book in trade paperback, Nerds, How Dorks, Dweebs, Techies, and Trekkies Can Save America and Why They Might Be Our Last Hope. Join the conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. So, David, we can all remember back to middle school when pretty much everyone is universally miserable for those couple of years. By high school, you know, you get to that point where it would seem that some kids are on top of the world while other kids are having a really hard time. How does the nerd stereotype morph when kids get to high school age?
Well, it depends on the school. It depends on the culture of the school, but usually by later in high school, kids who are labeled as nerds find their own niche. They are able to find other kids who share their interests, and they're more on solid footing with respect to where they're going. And, you know, they have friends who are like them, and they're moving ahead. What I think is interesting, sometimes I've talked to kids who are in high school, and kids who I know when they were in middle school were very popular, very, you know, sort of arbiters of the social scene and really kind of famous for putting other kids down. And I've had kids in high school say stuff to me like, yeah, I can't remember why I did that. Like, why didn't I like that kid? I can't remember. You know, it's sort of like this amnesia for the terrible things they did when they were in middle school. Because in high school, later in high school, things do start to even out and people start to be more like peers and people start to be able to value differences, which is really what high school is all about.
Now, there are cases where adults perhaps inadvertently play into this, and you describe the parents of a couple of patients who will tell you, oh, you know, my daughter is really bright. Now, she's not a nerd, but she makes good grades and whatever. And just that little sentence, that's something that kids hear and pay attention to.
Yeah, I think they do. I think, you know, kids hear parents use the word, and they use it in a derogatory fashion. And I sometimes argue that this is really, as a parent, this is a way to shoot yourself in the foot. No, because what are you saying? Are you saying, I don't want my child to be one of those kids who does well in school? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
That is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, that, oh, well, I want you to do well, but I don't want you to be a nerd.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mixed message at best from parents. And then, you know, of course, from TV, we get it's much less unmixed as a message. It's much more straightforwardly negative.
What about families where mom and dad are fine with having a nerdy kid, but the kid's really suffering, and the parents say, well, it's not important that you have the latest brand of tennis shoes or that you style your hair this way?
Yeah, I think it's important for parents to be realistic. You know, parents who haven't been in seventh grade lately don't really understand how brutal it can be.
Yeah.
And I do think, you know, I believe that beauty is only skin deep, and what's important is what's on the inside and all that stuff. But I don't think that it's bad to give in to kids' wish to be moderately fashionable. In the book, I talk about a family I knew, where the child was consistently being mocked at school because he was still wearing sweatpants to school when everybody else was wearing blue jeans. And I had to talk to the parents about, well, you know, it's not the end of the world to let him wear blue jeans just because everybody else is doing it. It doesn't mean it's a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's got some blue jeans and he stopped being made fun of. So.
Problem solved.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I'm not totally against kids fitting in.
Yeah.
I just think one needs to pick one's battles and one needs to fit in for the right reasons and for the easy compromises, but not the big life-changing compromises, so to speak.
David Anderegg is my guest. His book is called Nerds. We have lots of folks waiting on the line at 1-800-933-5372. So let's go to the phones, starting with Stephen in Dallas. Hi, Stephen.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Yeah. I'm kind of a nerd retiree. got out of high school maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And I remember, you know, people asking questions like, you know, why are you guys spending all this time on, like, this book or this movie or this game? And we came up with this answer that seemed to baffle people. Well, what do you have against having fun? And I always wondered, and since you've got the expert here, how is it that kids get so ingrained that, like, anything that is not, you know, soccer or football or American Idol is, like, a pox, a plague, you know, it's something to be feared?
What do you think about that, David?
I think there are really very powerful messages that come from American culture, from TV. One of the things I look at in the book is nerd self-tests on the Internet, for example, because when kids are younger and they're worried about whether or not they're a nerd, they can turn to nerd self-tests, which contain all of this information about how bad it is to be a nerd. But there are also television shows. Thank goodness it's off the air for a while. I hope it's off the air for good. Like Beauty and the Geek, for example, which featured all sorts of very unappealing young men with labels underneath a picture. And the labels were things like perfect SAT scores or biomechanical engineer. And, I mean, this show, more than any other, demonstrated to America that it's creepy to be interested in science and math and also certain kinds of video games and fantasy games and stuff like that. So I think there's a tremendous amount of information coming from above, which is indoctrination.
Mm-hmm. And those shows, I mean, that in that case, the nerds or the geeks are guys. I have to imagine even worse for girls who love science and math.
Well, yeah, I argue in the book that girls have been more, you know, unfortunately, they've had to make these choices for a much longer period of time. The idea that you can either be smart or sexy, but not both, and you have to choose. And girls have been familiar with that forever. Now, that choice is also being presented to boys, and boys have to choose. They can either be smart or sexy, but the culture won't let them be both. So they have to pick, and I think it's a false choice.
Let's go back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. This time we have Alan in Decatur. Hi, Alan.
Hi. Well, my question is, I'm 50 years old, and I was part of that group that you were talking about earlier during the 70s that you didn't want to take anything, you know, science, history, be cool, you know, not to be cool. Now, I was wondering if it's the same kind of pressure on today with the high school students today. For instance, I have a 17-year-old daughter and a 15-year-old son, whereas my wife and I, we brought them up to tell them that the nerds are the one that's going to be solving the problems and making the decent money these days. I just wonder if it now, they're seen differently in high school now as compared to back then.
I don't think so. Well, not from the kids I talk to. You know, as I said, I now talk to all sorts of people in their 20s who think that nerd and geek stereotypes are no longer so powerful. But the kids I talk to, I talk to kids all the time who tell me they don't want to do well in school because they don't want to be seen as a nerd, or they certainly don't want to take science classes or anything to do with engineering or anything like that because it's social poison. I don't think it's really changed that much, but I do think that depends on where you go. I think there's some places where, you know, in Silicon Valley and places where there's a big concentration of high-tech parents, I think it's quite different, but I don't live in a place like that, and most of the country isn't like that.
There's also got to be a big difference between choosing the label for yourself and wearing it with pride and having other people thrust it upon you.
Well, yeah, and we know from any devalued racial or ethnic group that amongst themselves, using those kinds of labels is perfectly fine, mm-hmm. right? But if somebody else from outside uses that label, it feels different. It feels derogatory and insulting. And I think it's the same thing with, you know, there are all sorts of science types who, you know, laughingly and jokingly call themselves nerds, and that's fine. But I'm talking about kids, and I'm talking about when they're getting screamed at in the halls in middle school, it's different. It's very different.
Do you know anything about why some kids need to make other kids feel bad?
Well, insecurity. You know, it's that social status in middle school is very much like, I think it's useful as an analogy to think about newcomers in any kind of social group or even newcomers in the country. There's a certain kind of trying to establish your own position by stepping on the fingers of the people who are below you on the ladder. And that certainly happens. You know, kids who are trying to figure out how to fit in will exclude others as a way of trying to assure themselves that they fit in. And that's really what, you know, middle school is all about, that, unfortunately.
Do you ever treat those kids, the ones who are yelling out the labels? I mean, is it harder to sort of relate to them?
Well, you know, I one-on-one, I think all kids, you know, because in my office they will expose their vulnerabilities in a way that they would never do outside.
Sure.
And they're easy to like, mm-hmm. you know. Really, it's sometimes I laugh to myself that if this were a kid I met in a hallway of a school when I was doing some school consulting, I might not like them. But the ones who make it to my office, you know, they usually tell me the truth about how they feel. And you know, those kids, you know, they don't feel all that confident and wonderful. In fact, they're terrified.
Yeah.
They're terrified about their social status.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Ken in Plano. Hello, Ken.
Yes, hi. I wonder if you could address directly the sort of the state of anti-intellectualism in America. You know, it's really interesting. We have this president who is a Harvard graduate, incredibly intelligent, but he's filling out a March Madness bracket this year. He kind of has he's got a foot in both sort of worlds. Just talk generally about it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
I think our president does that very self-consciously because, you know, when he first burst on the scene, people were starting to use the N-word on him, the nerd word. They were starting to describe how, you know, he was kind of skinny and, you know, elite university education, all that kind of stuff. And I think first of all, he is an accomplished athlete. And he lets people know it, and he lets people know that he's well-rounded. And I think he needs to do that. There are times when people are getting very critical of the president. I mean, this is always something that's available to people to make make the president or anybody like him seem alien, that they're too educated, that they're creepy. There's a quote last week. There was an excerpt from something from a book written by Mike Huckabee in which he was talking about the Obama administration and everybody in the Obama White House. They're all like a bunch of those nerdy kids who got straight A's, but nobody ever wanted to play ball with them because they couldn't hit a ball to save their life or something like that. I mean, it's kind of foolish, but that stereotype is always available. And so I think President Obama, you know, he pulls out the March Madness bracket or the pictures of himself playing basketball when he needs to for balance. And I think he's smart to do so.
Is that the difference between President Obama's victory and Vice President Gore's loss?
Well, you know, Al Gore was totally tortured by the press because he seemed like a know-it-all. And any recent political candidate who got the nerd label, Al Gore was it. Because he knew a whole bunch of stuff, and he knew a whole bunch of facts, and he liked to demonstrate that he knew a whole bunch of facts. And the press, it wasn't so much the public, but the press just tortured Al Gore about this aspect of his personality. You know, I don't think it's a bad thing to have somebody who knows a lot of facts. You know, I think that's probably a good thing. But But Gore had a certain kind of social stiffness at times, which played right into the stereotype, and it really worked against him, I think.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. If you can't get through on the phone, you can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's go next to Pulkett in Coppell. Hi, Pulkett.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, Chris. I love your show.
Thanks.
It's fabulous. And my question has to do with sort of this narrative that your guest is describing, which is an interesting one. But basically, I had a very different experience in middle school and high school, and I'm 22 now, so I wasn't in middle school and high school all that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
But so sort of my personal experience has been that, there's that nerd aspect, but you sort of build your own enclave within the school that encapsulates you in a different sort of realm. You take all the pre-AP classes, you take all the advanced classes, and you're surrounded by a totally different group of people. So this whole idea of, you know, you being classified as a nerd and all that, it sort of goes away a little bit because the people that you're surrounded with are often a similar group of people. And I wonder if, you know, that seems to be more of the case in schools where, you know, if your guests can comment on, you know, places where they have more of these AP and advanced type of classes, or, you know, if you've seen this kind of narrative also play out. Because I see that this was the common narrative in my school and has been, you know, the reason for a number of the, you know, so-called nerd success in the schools that I went to.
What do you think, David?
I think it really depends on the school. I absolutely agree with the caller that if you are surrounded by like-minded kids, obviously you don't have social ostracism. In my local school systems, the kids in middle school, that is, up until eighth grade, are not tracked. There's no tracking at all. There's no advanced classes of any kind, and all the kids are all in the same classes, and I think that makes a big difference. And then when you go to high school, of course, you're the kids who want to be in advanced pre-AP or AP classes are in those classes, and then they find each other. Personally, myself, I went to a junior high school, which was also rigidly tracked, and I was in the same classes with all the college-bound kids. And, you know, it was a lot better for me. I wasn't picked on because everybody else in my classes, they were all the same kinds of kids. So I do think school culture really has a lot to do with it. I think it's much more difficult in middle schools, which don't have tracking within the middle school culture, which a lot of them don't. My answer to that is it depends.
Mm-hmm. David Anderegg is my guest. He's professor of psychology at Bennington College in Vermont and also works in private practice for psychotherapy. His book is called Nerds, How Dorks, Dweebs, Techies, and Trekkies Can Save America and Why They Might Be Our Last Hope. Join our conversation by sending email to think@kera.org or by calling 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education, offering an information session March 15th for its CFP certificate program in Dallas, starting in April. You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with psychology professor David Anderegg, whose book is called Nerds, How Dorks, Dweebs, Techies, and Trekkies Can Save America and Why They Might Be Our Last Hope. Join us by sending email to think@kera.org. That's where we hear from Kay in Arlington, who writes, "My son is 8 years old, loves math and science, and is in Cub Scouts. How can I help him survive the next few years without being labeled a nerd and, more importantly, retaining his self-confidence and love of the sciences?"
Oh, tough question. Well, certainly I think being exposed to adult mentors, but especially young adult mentors, what I always suggest to parents in this situation is find a really hip, attractive, very cool local college student who is majoring in either science or math, and make sure you include that person in your child's life somehow, as a tutor or as a family friend or babysitter or something like that, because I think that's extremely important, that if they have a model, and the model is somebody who is well-rounded and popular and, you know, good-looking or not or whatever, but just somebody who is comfortable with him or herself and is planning to be a scientist or a mathematician, I think that's the best thing you can do.
I'm curious about what role teachers have to play in sort of putting a lid on some of the teasing that nerds undergo. On the one hand, they might want to step in and protect these kids. On the other hand, maybe that's the last thing these kids need, is to have extra attention from the teacher.
Well, I think, you know, it is really important for schools to have a climate of that stereotyping is not allowed, and that anti-intellectual stereotyping is not allowed either. You know, I don't think you have to make a big fuss out of protecting certain kids, but just to point out to kids that this is a stereotype, it's false, it's goofy, it's dumb, and you don't want to be involved in it. You know, and I think teachers can actually do a lot about that. Coming to the aid of particular kids is always perilous, because then sometimes it makes it worse. But establishing a climate of tolerance and establishing a climate where complexity is celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
When I've gone around and talked to groups of science and math teachers, one of the things I always say to them is, stop apologizing for complexity. Do not say to the kids, oh, you know, this is kind of nerdy, but stick with me here. Or, you know, don't talk about how difficult it is and how weird and arcane it is. Just, you know, if you love your subject matter, just do it. Just talk about how cool it is. And that enthusiasm is much more important than, you know, trying to be cool by embracing kids' worst stereotypes. I think that's a big mistake.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time we will speak with Tim, calling from Oklahoma. Hi, Tim.
Hello. I just wanted to say that a lot of it comes from the student themselves. I know when I was in the 10th grade, my family relocated, and I went from a private school to a public school, and suddenly I was labeled as splinterhead because I had, you know, the short military-style haircut and everything like that, and this is the early, mid-70s, and it was quite derogatory, and I just kind of lived with it and accepted it and said, okay, so I'm splinterhead, and over the course of 2 years, I was able to start interacting with all the groups. You know, there was the jock group, the stoner group, the Mensa group, and all that. And you just kind of live with it. And by the end of 2 years, turns out I was kind of a popular kind of guy because I didn't really care what other people were thinking.
Thanks so much for your call. Yeah, you know, a lot of times, you know, the advice that we give to kids is just pretend that it doesn't bother you. Does that work?
No. it doesn't really, because it does bother them.
Yeah.
And I think being empathic with the fact that it does bother them is much more important than telling them that it shouldn't bother them, because then they feel bad and then feel guilty for feeling bad, and I don't think that's useful. But I do think, I love your caller's approach, which is taking the long view. And that's really what, you know, kids sometimes lose sight of. They think that what happened to them, especially younger kids, what happened to them in school today is, that's going to be their fate forever, you know? And we know that's not true. But if you are one of those exceptional kids who is mature enough to understand that, okay, I've been called this today, I've been treated this way today, but this isn't going to last, and there are some things I can do to outlast them,
mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. There aren't all kids who have that kind of long perspective, and one of the things we adults can do is try and help give it to them.
Well, if you've only been on the planet for 12 years, I guess the next 5 or 6 seems like a really long time.
Yeah, and we all know that the younger the child, the more distorted their perception of the passage of time.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have mature understandings of length of time. That's why high school is better for kids than middle school.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Plano. We'll speak with BJ. Hi, BJ.
Hi, I have a question for your guest. I have children. We are from India, and where nerdiness is encouraged and totally adored upon both by the parents, teachers, and other students in schools. And here, the opposite seems to exist. And it's almost easy to be a nerd if you're of Asian descent, because that's what is expected of you. And it almost seems like it's a lot more harder for a white or a black African-American kid to be a nerd. And I find that the kids, by process of selection, the nerdy kids find other Asian nerdy kids where it's okay to be nerdy and where they are accepted more. And there is a process of selection that goes on. My question was, is that racial thing pretty widely prevalent all over, or am I seeing a section of process that's not that widely prevalent?
It's really interesting observations. Thanks, BJ. What do you think, David?
I think it's widely prevalent all over, because I think part of what kids mean when they're using the word nerd is they're expressing their opinion about the proper relationship between adults and children. And in America, the proper relationship is that adults should have no effect on children. But a lot of kids from Asian culture, South Asia, as well as East Asia, they're closer to their parents. They're more, if you don't mind me saying so, obedient, and they're expected to be obedient. And I don't agree with the caller in that I don't think that makes it easier. I think in some places there are a lot of Asian kids who just feel terrible about being labeled as an Asian nerd because it's so much of it goes with the territory. But a lot of Asian kids, you know, their parents expect them to do well in school and expect them to be influenced by the older generation, and they are. And I think that is a huge cultural difference. I think a lot of South Asian and East Asian kids understand that. They find each other because they have to deal with their parents' expectations and their classmates' expectations, which are usually widely divergent.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time we'll speak with Dale in Dallas. Hi, Dale.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call
Sure.
and for covering this subject. I have a comment and a question. I'd just like to share my experience. When I was in middle school, and I think you're right that middle school is maybe a little harder. Fortunately, I was protected in, you know, the gifted courses, but I had to ride the bus to school. And that's where I found that I was being ostracized to the point where they even petitioned to have me off the bus. And that was very detrimental to me developmentally, and I ended up, you know, kind of pushing away the nerd reputation and actually gravitating more towards being cool. And I didn't really find the nerd in me again until college and decided to be proud of it. I think your advice to find, and you know, a tutor or somebody that can teach them that there is more to life, you know, than you said in middle school and in high school. My question is, what about gender? And I'm sorry if you've covered that before, but, you know, I think obviously being an intelligent and somebody who's not afraid to speak or ask questions, you know, is there a difference? Because in our society, it may not be as valued if you're a female.
All right. This is a huge question, and I'm glad you asked. I think it's, you know, when we're thinking about stereotypes, what I mean by a stereotype, for example, if you ask people to describe a prototypical nerd, right, to just describe what a nerd looks like and who they are, et cetera, 99% of people will describe a male. So it is kind of a male stereotype. But I do think that, as I said earlier, women, I think in some ways, have had to deal with this. And one aspect of this they've had to deal with for a long, long, long time. That is that, you know, being intellectual is seen as a turnoff by men. And so, you know, smart women have to try and pretend, either dumb it down or decide that they're not going to worry about turning men off if they are really operating at full power. But as I said, you know, beyond that, I think sometimes it's, you know, girls are much more complicated in this regard. And I think sometimes, girls can get away with being nerdy or geeky in a way that boys can't because they're seen as so quirky, they're so unusual. They're just like, you know, who are you? It's kind of a category. It's kind of a new category. Like girl nerd is kind of a new category that people aren't quite sure what to make of it. If we, you know, looking back to the example of Beauty and the geeks are all men. And then just to throw everybody a curve, they had one girl geek one year. But most of the time, the geeks are men. The nerdy or geeky people on the Big Bang Theory, they're all men, right? So it's kind of a male stereotype, and I think it's hard to predict how people are going to respond to girls who fit the stereotype, because they don't, in a way, because they're girls.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Next on the line, we have Nick in Dallas. Hello, Nick.
Hey. All right, so the point I was going to make is I was homeschooled until I was in 11th grade. I got dropped into public school for my 11th and 12th year. And because of being homeschooled, I'd already been the outcast. It was just me and my brother, and I rarely, you know, interacted with a lot of people. So when I was in high school, It was just sort of an accepted thing for me. I took debate class, I took Latin, I took all the science classes, and during my junior and senior year, I did a lot of papers and wrote papers in classes, and I was always the top of the class. And it never really occurred to me that being the nerd was supposed to be something that you weren't supposed to be. And I always, my question would be is, now that I've had time to be in the military and I deal with a lot of people in the military, I see that the intellectual person is generally looked down upon by the normal groups. And the question I have to ask is, why exactly is it seen within today's society, especially here in America, that the intellectual person is the nerd, is given these stereotypes, whereas you look at countries like Europe or in Asia, intellectual is the top of the food chain?
Well, it's a really tricky question, and I think part of, you know, to answer the global question first, a friend of mine who's an anthropologist points out that in cultures which are just emerging from pre-literacy, which are really working really, really hard to educate all their citizens, they can't afford to have anti-intellectual stereotypes. They're just working on getting everybody educated. So there are a lot of countries in the world where this just doesn't happen. I do think here in this country, there is, as I said, I think there's this complicated trade-off. Like, you know, you can't be smart and beautiful, literally beautiful, that you have to choose one or the other. And that is a false choice because, as I sometimes tell people, you know, if you don't know this is a false choice, just go and take a walk around the Harvard campus, the MIT campus. You know, there's full of, like, gorgeous young people who are also geniuses. I mean, it's just not true that you have to choose to be one or the other. But there is this idea that if you are intelligent, that somehow you are less appealing, less sexy, less warm. I think part of it is the way we talk about precision. And we talk about precision as if it's something cold and robotic. And I don't think precision is cold or robotic. I think precision is just great because it's, you know, clear and precise. And I don't think it has to be cold or robotic. So some of it, I think, is our language, and which I think we can change, but we all have to work at changing it.
David Anderegg is professor of psychology at Bennington College in Vermont and also treats patients in a private psychotherapy practice. His book, which has just been updated and re-released in trade paperback, is called Nerds: How Dorks, Dweebs, Techies, and Trekkies Can Save America and Why They Might Be Our Last Hope. David, thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.